Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, Plunges into Music. Question number one. Which of the following famous entertainers started out in vaudeville? Was that A, Bob Hope, B, Judy Garland, C, Jack Benny, D, all of the above, or E, none of the above? So which of those entertainers began their careers in vaudeville? And question number two, which one of the following is not true about Elvis Presley? Is it A, he obtained permits to carry firearms in every U.S. state except Tennessee? Was it B, he bought a $10,000 robe inscribed "The People's Champion" for boxer Muhammad Ali? Was it C, he is quoted as saying, "I never tasted alcohol"? Or was it D, he spent $55,000 for a stretch limousine that matched the one he saw in the movie Shaft? Or was it E, in reply to a question about staying healthy, he said, "I eat a lot of Jell-O, fruit Jell-O"? So, all of those items are true statements about Elvis, except which one? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of April the 4th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1962 that the Russian newspaper Pravda warned youths about the dangers of doing the dance, the twist. 1962, today, in the USSR. And it was 42 years ago today, 1983, that the U.S. Interior Secretary James Watt banned the Beach Boys from the 4th of July celebration on the Washington Mall. He said, "Rock and roll bands attract the wrong element." And that was 1983 in the USA today.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm gone to Carolina in my mind.
James Taylor's Carolina in My Mind introduces our country and folk music news. It's titled James Taylor Songs Will Take Center Stage in a New Musical. This is published in the News and Observer by Renee Umstead on March the 18th, 2025. A new musical inspired by the work of James Taylor, one of North Carolina's most well-known adopted sons, is in development. The production, Fire and Rain, is named after the 1970 hit song, which was featured on Taylor's second studio album, Sweet Baby James. Actor Tracy Letts will write the musical. He has acted in many films, including Greta Gerwig's Little Women and the 2019 film Ford vs. Ferrari. David Cromer will direct Fire and Rain. In 2018, he won the Tony Award for Best Direction of a Musical for The Band's Visit. No timeline on when the musical will be staged has been revealed. Taylor is a six-time Grammy winner and has been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2000 by Paul McCartney and the Songwriters Hall of Fame. He also received a Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2015, presented by then-President Barack Obama. Taylor, who turned 77 earlier in March, was born in Boston, Massachusetts, but his family moved to North Carolina early in his life. He grew up in the Chapel Hill area. His father, Ike, was a faculty member and later dean of the UNC School of Medicine. Over the years, Taylor has been engaged in politics. He has credited his engagement to his time growing up in the Triangle. All of us grew up with the idea that Chapel Hill, Durham, and Raleigh, with UNC, Duke, and NC State, were part of a commitment to the kind of progressive politics that were laying the future for the state, Taylor told the Charlotte Observer in 2012. His song, Carolina in My Mind, which has become a kind of anthem for the state, was released in 1968 on Taylor's debut album, James Taylor. Though many decades have passed, Taylor still keeps his connection to the state strong. Last year, he performed at Concert for Carolina at Charlotte's Bank of America Stadium. The event, which also featured Eric Church, Luke Combs, Billy Strings, Keith Urban, Sheryl Crow, and the Avett Brothers, raised $24.5 million for Hurricane Helene recovery efforts. Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini introduces our classical music news. It's titled Rachmaninoff, Huge Hands, Hypnotherapy, and Some of Music's Most Breathtaking Moments. The last great Russian romantic, meet Sergei Rachmaninoff, creator of some of classical music's most irresistible melodies. This is published in BBC Music Magazine on March 31, 2025. Sergei Rachmaninoff, 1873 to 1943, was a Russian-American composer, virtuoso pianist, and conductor. Excelling in two spheres, Rachmaninoff was certainly one of the finest pianists of his, or perhaps any, era, and was also perhaps the last great flowering of Romanticism in Russian classical music. Following a disastrous premiere of his first symphony in 1895, which was probably led by a drunk conductor, and under-rehearsed, Rachmaninoff composed very little for the next 4 years. Then came a successful program of hypnotherapy, with a therapist who repeated phrases like, "You will write a great concerto." This therapy gave Rachmaninoff the necessary creative breakthrough to complete the sweeping emotional piano concerto number 2. It's now one of the composer's very best known and best loved works. In the course of the next 16 years, Rachmaninoff conducted at the Bolshoi Theater, relocated to Dresden, Germany, and toured the United States for the first time. Following the Russian Revolution, Rachmaninoff and his family left Russia, and in 1918 they settled in New York City. He completed just six works between 1918 and his death in 1943, including the song playing in the background now, his famous Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini. Is it true that Rachmaninoff had very big hands? Rachmaninoff's great fame as a pianist rested in part on his incredible technical perfection. It's widely believed, for example, that the pianist composer's large hands were able to stretch a twelfth, in other words, 1.5 octaves, the stretch from middle C to high G, for example. Rachmaninoff's large hands may have been a sign of a condition called Marfan syndrome, a genetic disorder that affects connective tissue. So how good a pianist was Rachmaninoff? Rachmaninoff is often considered the greatest pianist of all time. His expressive style at the piano comes down partly to the fact that he considered himself a romantic and continued to inject that movement's expressive emotional qualities into his pianism. When did Rachmaninoff die? By 1942, Rachmaninoff's declining health led to his relocation to Beverly Hills, California, and later became a U.S. citizen, a few weeks before he died of advanced melanoma in 1943. In the 1930s, Rachmaninoff's built a villa overlooking Lake Lucerne, where again he could surround himself with silence. The Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini was a result. Nowadays, there is scarcely a single work of Rachmaninoff's that's not on disc, while research on him is carried out worldwide. Whole academic conferences are devoted to him, and performances of his work seek out perspectives that are hidden within a musical personality long misunderstood. What is Rachmaninoff's legacy? Most of Rachmaninoff's opulent, emotional, song-like music was composed in the 20th century, at a time when musical movements like serialism and modernism were starting to gain traction. But you wouldn't know it from Rachmaninoff's music. He followed in the footsteps of his idol, Tchaikovsky, in writing music with sublime memories, melodies, lush orchestration, and truly romantic ambitions in terms of moods and emotions conveyed. As such, Rachmaninoff may have been less modern than contemporaries such as Prokofiev or Debussy, but Rachmaninoff's music doesn't have to be considered from a standpoint of 20th century musical development. It should be treasured for the lush, eloquent, frequently very exciting, and often very Russian music that it is. Last word to Stravinsky. We're fond of the description of Rachmaninoff by Stravinsky, the composer's compatriot and near contemporary, though by no means musical soulmate. He said, Rachmaninoff's immortalizing totality was his scowl. He was a 6.5 foot tall scowl. He was an awesome man. Amen to that. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Musicians Can Teach Us the Secret to a More Successful Life. Here's how. It's official. Playing an instrument is good for your mind and body. But, asks Arlan Todes, what other life skills can musicians teach us? This is published by Arian Todes on the 7th of February, 2025, in Classical Music, BBC Music Magazine. It is a truth universally acknowledged that playing a musical instrument is good for you. Study after study has shown improved cognitive abilities, lower blood pressure, and even protection against dementia. And these are just the scientifically testable benefits. What of the more intangible life skills and values? Maybe the most fundamental skill that music teaches is listening, both to ourselves and to the people around us. Jacqueline Thomas has been cellist of the Brodsky Quartet since its inception 50 years ago, and she explains, we're playing a complicated line ourselves, trying to express an emotion, at the same time being completely aware of the others. Listening and adjusting, but not being led by it, it's a constant balance of how to appear completely immersed in your own performance and yet listening to the other parts. That's kind of multitasking is great for the brain. Might this process help people socially? Thomas thinks so. There's something about the balance in a room and the awareness of who's standing around you and if it's somebody else's turn to speak. Many people don't know how to have a conversation. They simply talk about themselves. It could be that music helps people to understand the to and fro of a conversation. A corollary is that, paradoxically, musicians know how to be quiet, she says. It's astonishing how many people don't know how to sit still and be quiet, yet you can walk into an orchestral rehearsal and 120 people are absolutely silent. People who don't understand what it's like to be in the musical moment are likely to cough at an inappropriate moment or shift in their seat. Another aspect of being a musician, solo recitals apart, is a team sport. You're going from thinking only about yourself to starting to think about other people and the world. Self-preservation is important, but equally, there's a whole world out there of which you're a part. You start to appreciate that and to think empathetically. The article skips down, ends with this. So which comes first? Are great musicians born curious, resilient, critical thinking, good at listening, and all the rest? Or does their life in music make them so? Maybe what we can say is that playing an instrument offers the possibility of developing and exercising these skills, with or without any natural talent. From there, perhaps, muscle memory or willpower helps to transfer them to our outside lives, to our own benefit, and to that of society. And wouldn't the world be a better place if everyone had that possibility?
You'll never know how much I really love you. You'll never know how much I really care.
The Beatles, Do You Want to Know a Secret? Introduce our rock and pop music news. It's an article titled, Why John Lennon and Paul McCartney Wanted to Be Like Carole King. This is written by Matthew Trzynski on the 12th of February, 2025, and CheatSheet.com. Carole King inspired John Lennon and Paul McCartney before she was a household name. Firstly, some background. King did not initially become notable for being a pop star. She became notable for being one of the biggest pop songwriters of the 1960s. She and her husband, Jerry Goffin, were behind a long string of hits. Together they penned Little Eva's The Locomotion, The Shirelles' Will You Love Me Tomorrow, Aretha Franklin's You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, and The Monkees' Pleasant Valley Sunday. King did not become a household name until she released her 1971 album, Tapestry.
Say the words you love to hear.
During a 1971 interview in the book Lennon on Lennon, Conversations with John Lennon, the Nobody Told Me singer discussed the onset of the Lennon-McCartney songwriting partnership. In the early days, Paul and I, we wanted to be the Jerry Goffin and Carole King of England, you know, he said. Goffin and King were very big in those days, and we used to want to be Buddy Holly and the Goffin King, et cetera, et cetera. And so we wrote pop songs with a kind of mind that's a pop song, like Bubblegum, and that's real life. John's words make a lot of sense in the context of the Beatles' career. The popular songs King wrote for other artists were basically and generally sensitive ballads or upbeat pop songs. During their early days, most of the Beatles' music fell into one of those two categories. It wasn't until later that they started to get experimental. John revealed that his approach to songwriting changed when he heard Bob Dylan's music. Afterward, he was less interested in writing bubblegum and started caring more about his lyrics. Dylan made John decide that the Beatles' words should matter just as much as their music. John's comments about King and Dylan illuminate his evolution as a songwriter. Despite this, he underestimated King. While she gave us The Locomotion, one of the best bubblegum pop songs ever, other early King hits had more depth. The Shirelles' Will You Love Me Tomorrow and Franklin's A Natural Woman are both sensitive ballads, while The Monkees' Pleasant Valley Sunday is a piece of social commentary about the suburbs. King is many things, but she's not a bubblegum pop musician. John wanted to be like King, but he didn't fully appreciate her early work. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which of the following famous entertainers started out in vaudeville? Was it A, Bob Hope, B, Judy Garland, C, Jack Benny, D, all the above, or E, none of the above? Correct answer is answer D. All three of these famous entertainers started out in vaudeville. As noted in Uncle John's Bathroom Reader Plunges into Music, by the 1880s, theaters were built to host circus acts, minstrel shows, dancers, singers, and musicians for a few performances. Then the acts moved on to the next town. By the 1890s, these touring troupes and the theaters where they performed had evolved into an organized entertainment circuit, vaudeville. No one's sure where the word comes from, but one possible explanation goes back to a 15th century troubadour who traveled and sang his songs in Normandy, France, at a place called Vaudeuvre, which could be the origin of the word vaudeville. Most of the performers who worked in the vaudeville circuit never made it big. Like the troubadours of old, they lived hand-to-mouth and toured the country playing in small clubs and theaters. Some did become stars, however, including Jack Benny, Judy Garland, George Burns, Bob Hope, Fanny Bryce, and Charlie Chaplin. Vaudeville died out in the 1930s when movies took over as the most popular form of entertainment. Many of the theater chains that once hosted the traveling shows, places like the Fox in Detroit, and the Orpheum in Los Angeles converted to music palaces. Some vaudeville theaters, though, like the Wilhern in L.A. or the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York, continued to host music groups and still do today. Everyone from Gwen Stefani to the Rolling Stones has played those clubs, proving that the tradition of the traveling musician is alive and well. And the answer to our second question, which one of the following is not true about Elvis Presley, was that A, he obtained permits to carry firearms in every U.S. state except Tennessee. B, he bought a $10,000 robe inscribed the People's Champion for boxer Muhammad Ali. C, Elvis is quoted as saying, I never tasted alcohol. D, he spent $55,000 for a stretch limousine that matched the one he saw in the movie Shaft. Or E, in reply to a question about staying healthy, he said, I eat a lot of Jell-O, fruit Jell-O. Correct answer. Answer A is not true. Turns out that Elvis toured the FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C. on December 30, 1970. He sought and obtained permits to carry firearms in every state in the U.S., Tennessee included. The other statements listed are true. Elvis did buy a $10,000 robe inscribed the People's Champion for boxer Muhammad Ali, which Ali wore in the match against Ken Norton. Ali lost that fight. Elvis did say that he never tasted alcohol, and he does eat a lot of fruit Jell-O in reply to a question about staying healthy. And Elvis did pay $55,000 for a stretch limo that he was impressed seeing in the movie Shaft. In honor of this month's Earth Day, let's close out today's program with Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in Raleigh since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.
There might much more than I never knew.